That next morning, I looked carefully at my almanac in the hopes of finding some sign that my life wouldn't be lived without purpose. I was feeling so dejected that even Mr. Arashino seemed to recognize it and sent me on an errand to purchase sewing needles at the dry goods store 30 minutes away. On my way back, strolling alongside the roadside as the sun was setting, I was nearly run down by an army truck. It's the closest I've ever come to being killed. Only the next morning did I notice that my almanac had warned against travel in the direction of the rat, precisely the direction in which the dry goods store lay. I'd been looking only for a sign about the chairman and hadn't noticed. From this experience, I understood the danger of focusing only on what isn't there. What if I came to the end of my life and realized that I'd spent every day watching for a man who would never come to me? What an unbearable sorrow it would be to realize I'd never really tasted the things I'd eaten or seen the places I'd been, because I'd thought of nothing but the chairman even while my life was drifting away from me. And yet, if I drew my thoughts back from him, what life would I have? I would be like a dancer who had practiced since childhood for a performance she would never give. The war ended for us in August of 1945. Most anyone who lived in Japan during this time will tell you that it was the very bleakest moment in a long night of darkness. Our country wasn't simply defeated, it was destroyed. And I don't mean by all the bombs, as horrible as those were. When your country has lost a war and an invading army pours in, you feel as though you yourself have been led to the execution ground to kneel, hands bound, and wait for the sword to fall. During a period of a year or more, I never once heard the sound of laughter, unless it was little Juntaro, who didn't know any better, and when Juntaro laughed, his grandfather waved a hand to shush him. I've often observed that men and women who were young children during these years have a certain seriousness about them. There was too little laughter in their childhoods. By the spring of 1946, we'd all come to recognize that we would live through the ordeal of defeat. There were even those who believed Japan would one day be renewed. All the stories about invading American soldiers raping and killing us had turned out to be wrong, and in fact, we gradually came to realize that the Americans on the whole were remarkably kind. One day, an entourage of them came riding through the area in their trucks. I stood watching them with the other women from the neighborhood. I'd learned during my years in Gion to regard myself as the inhabitant of a special world that separated me from other women. And in fact, I'd felt so separated all these years that I'd only rarely wondered how other women lived, even the wives of the men I'd entertained. Yet there I stood in a pair of torn work pants with my stringy hair hanging along my back. I hadn't bathed in several days, for we had no fuel to heat the water more than a few times each week. To the eyes of the American soldiers who drove past, I looked no different from the women around me, and as I thought of it, who could say I was any different?